Welcome back, everybody, to the Life in the City podcast from Antioch Community Church. Today, Rachel and I and our kids get to sit down with Bryce Langley, our pastoral resident, and we are talking about Advent. We're talking about the meaning behind the season of Advent. We're talking about surviving the holidays with family and kids and all the expectations that come with it. And I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. Bryce is preaching all through the Advent season. And so this was a conversation that he wanted to have to kind of give us some things to think about in the greater context of this season of Christmas that, you know, just aren't conversations we normally would get to have during sermons. So I hope you enjoy this conversation, and I hope you're blessed by it and able to think about these next 4 weeks leading up to Christmas in maybe a renewed way. If maybe this season gets tiring for you, I hope that this is a chance to be reminded of what it's all about. I do want to make another plug. If you are a parent, I want to hear from you guys, especially from your kids, how they would tell the Christmas story. Now, if you have older kids, I would love to get a recording of them from you telling the Christmas story in their own words, or maybe just telling a piece of the story, or describing people in the story. Maybe it's just, who do you see in the nativity? Or what does a sheep say? Or something like that. Or what did the angels sing? That kind of thing. And what I want to do with all of those recordings is make a supercut of kids retelling the Christmas story. If you have older kids, they could even read Luke chapter 2, or you could read something from the Jesus Storybook Bible. But anything. It doesn't even have to be all that accurate. I'm more looking for just the childhood wonder that comes with this season and how kids understand the story in their early years. So if you can do that, you could either do it through a video recording and I'll pull the audio, or you could just stealthily pull out your voice memos. If you have a smartphone, you probably have a voice memo app. Just search for it. It's probably built in. I think that would just be really awesome. And we will share that here on the podcast, presuming we get enough little storytellers. You can send that to me via email, coley@antiochcommunity.org, or if you have my number, you can text me. That's all I'll say about that for now. If you have questions, reach out, and I hope you enjoy this conversation with Bryce about the season of Advent. So we're back talking about Advent today with Bryce. And you are actually preaching all of the Advent sermons, right?
Yeah, you're stuck with me.
Whole month of December. That's great.
I'll take it. What made you say yes to doing the Advent series?
Part of it was just an opportunity.
Did you say yes, or were you voluntold?
I was voluntold. You know, I had wanted a chance to, instead of just kind of dipping my toes into the water, to really figure out what it means to, you know, get tossed into the deep end and swim, because there's obviously a lot more to planning the series itself. There's all of the things that are, you know, kind of surrounding it between the extracurricular materials like this. And I think it's, you know, just really good, I don't know, practice, I guess, is the way that I would describe it. And it's also kind of my swan song as a resident, so.
Your swan song. Yeah. Not like you're going anywhere in January.
No, not like I'm going anywhere in January, but as a resident, it'll be my last hurrah. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Let's just start with some terms. Like, we call this the Advent season, but what is Advent?
Yeah, Advent is a, I'm trying to think of the Latin like prefixes and everything. But I'm pretty sure it's to wait before, add, pre, that kind of thing. But it's essentially a time within the Christian calendar where we anticipate the birth of Christ. So it's a specific time. It's kind of like Lent, like leading up to Easter, where we're actively, you know, waiting on, meditating on, and, you know, engaging within certain practices that allow our hearts to be receptive to the memorial that is the incarnation, where God came to earth in human form that would literally change the course of cosmic history.
Yeah.
So
I love that idea of that anticipation, or as one author put it, the deep breath before the plunge. Mm. It's a Lord
Gandalf,
of the Rings reference.
The white.
But it also kind of reminds me of, and this is part of the Christmas story, but I don't know if it's technically, you know, the word Advent. But like there were 400 years of silence before Jesus comes, between the last prophet and Christ.
Yep.
And everyone is just, the Jews were dying for a word from God. And then lo and behold, here comes the Lord himself in the form of a baby, which is not at all what they expected. I think that's pretty, it's kind of a cool way to spend the month, like waiting for Christmas day, where to kind of memorialize the way that the Jewish people were waiting for 400 years even.
And that's a little antithetical to our culture, right? We don't know how to wait for things these days. Right. We don't know what it means to like look forward to something, really. We are so used to instant gratification and things. And so the concept or idea of waiting with anticipation and hope, not knowing fully yet what even that hope would bring, I think for people, and we still anticipate and look forward to some hopes that and some joys that we don't yet fully know how will come to fruition with Christ. It's not something we're used to by any means. We're used to filling our time, filling our head, filling our space, our mental energy, for sure.
And in a lot of ways, it feels like the Christmas season is even like it ups the ante in that frenzy.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not culturally, it's not like a time of calm. It's like, oh man, the holidays are here.
Yep.
Yep.
You know,
this many days till Christmas. You know, you see that starting in July sometimes on like social media, and it's like, okay, whoa, hold on, pump the brakes here.
Well, I mean, and then there's the Hallmark Channel doing Christmas in July for a week just to remind us.
Yes, that's
right.
Oh
yeah, it's just around the corner, man.
Well, they only have so much product they can.
that is very true. Very limited supply, but very high demand.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, my husband was at the Elder Retreat this past weekend, and I may or may not have watched a Hallmark Christmas movie while he was gone. And we always play the game of, like, you can kind of, like, guess the plot and who's going to get together and what's going to happen and what's going to be magical before you even watch it, but it's fun sometimes.
Emily's grandmother is, like, the aficionado on Hallmark movies. She has the entire schema down to, like, the most minute thing. She's like, now at about the 15-minute mark towards the end, there's a breakup for maybe about a minute and a half. And it's just like, man, Joyce, you have seen every single one of them.
The wise old man from the small town is going to come talk to somebody about like why they should get back together. And
you know, in a hardware store or in like some sort of like really clean restaurant that definitely looks way too artificial. Bless you, Dax.
Once again, we have company during our recording.
That was the cutest toddler sneeze ever.
Especially because he like kind of rolled back a little bit.
Knocked him over. Propelled his whole body.
That's awesome. Well, so how do we as Christians then like manage that? We have two different cultures, two different worlds that we're living in. One being the culture of Minnesota for our context. Mm-hmm. And then one being what we know Christmas is actually about, the biblical perspective. Mm-hmm. How do you think about those two things and wrestle with that?
Yeah, it seems to me there's kind of like the two poles almost, is that there is, at least within in American Christianity, I think there's the tendency to go to one side, which is the sort of, you know, conveniently religious at, you know, Easter Sunday and then Christmas Eve. And it doesn't really get, you know, much thought in the active lifestyle choices and discipleship to Jesus, because it's just kind of relegated to tradition. Yeah. This is kind of what we do. And that's part of, I think, Minnesota, especially because there's a lot of history of Protestantism in the Scandinavian, you know, traditions and stuff like that. And that's something that was certainly a part of my growing up. But I think the other one that swings on, you know, a pendulum to the farther side is to say that you know, being holy and truly meditating on Advent the right way is to reject every bit of Americana. That you have to, you know, do away with every single, like, get rid of Christmas trees, don't do presents. It has to be almost like a hyper pious sort of environment in your home.
Almost what we see the Pharisees doing with, like, legalism, right?
Yeah,
taking
exactly.
it so far to the extreme mm-hmm. that nobody could ever say that you have a tainted little view of Americana in your Christmas yeah. tradition.
It yeah. kind of reminds me of when the Pharisee goes down to the corner in Luke 11 and he says, I thank you, God, that I'm not like other men. And yeah. I feel like that could almost get substituted with, I thank you, God, that I'm not like, you know, the hedonists, that I'm not the materialists, that I'm not the consumers, that I'm not any of those things, and I create my own little enclave. And all in the same, I think this is part of what we're talking about, is that, yes, reject materialism and the consumerism of Christmas. It definitely defies the physics of the Christmas story.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, I think if we are meant to be and called to be very joyful people and practice the fruit of the Spirit, part of that is practicing generosity and hospitality in the culture that you are a part of. And there's a tasteful way to do it, which I think is actually the most compelling vision. Like, a third way is... Coley, I think you had mentioned, like, before we were recording.
Yeah, that it seems like sometimes there's these polar opposites fighting,
yeah.
but in the, and Jesus does this all the time,
yeah.
right? Like, the Pharisees are going to argue one way, the woman caught in adultery is on another end,
yeah.
and Jesus is like, how about this way? And it's not the happy medium. It's not, like, no. between the two.
Yeah.
It's just a completely different, better way.
Yeah.
So what does that look like for you? I mean, how do you think yeah. about navigating that?
Yeah, I think for me, and anticipating, you know, sort of pun intended, I guess, in the anticipating of Christmas and knowing that as a church, we all have, you know, families, there's travel plans, there's thinking about, you know, budgeting, there's all that stuff that, you know, I want to be able to help speak to and to disciple and to see where the Word of God actually speaks to some of those dynamics in principle. Mm-hmm. There's a few things that I think on a practical level are really good to navigate, you know, the holiday season with. And I think one of the first things that I can think of, I'd love to hear your both of your opinions on this, especially because you have small kids, is setting good boundaries with tough family members ahead of time instead of letting it all happen in the moment. That's
yeah.
one of the first ones that I can think of.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll go first because I actually I'm really spoiled. And I'm not just saying this because it's recording, but like, I wouldn't say we have a tough family member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We just have a lot of family.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so like, it's not so much like, oh gosh, how are we going to deal with, you know, Uncle Bruce or something? We don't have an Uncle Bruce. So
that's what I get called sometimes because,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, I suppose Bryce.
Yeah, I've been called it all my life. So,
oh, funny. That's funny. But we just kind of have to, and we've learned this in the last 3 years now with Dax of like knowing our limits.
Yeah.
You know, before we had Dax, I mean, I could be with family for 14 hours and sure, you're exhausted, but like, it's worth it. It's Christmas, you know. But now it's like, well, no, it's not just my family. It's actually my family and my extended family and my own like in-home family. And John's family,
right, yeah.
you know, and so we have to, and then Gavin has his family too. And, you know, so we have to really protect, but not like in not a overprotective way. I don't
right.
need to put boundaries on my boundaries, but just to simply recognize like, okay, how many times can we push Dax to the limit in 1 week before
yeah.
he's just going to get sick,
yeah.
you know, much less become a nightmare. And it, sometimes that just means, yeah, we have to leave at 7 p.m., you know, and that's just where it's going to have to be.
Yeah.
Or we can only push it so far or that kind
yeah.
of things. We haven't had to deal with, like, how to talk about gift giving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, again, our family is pretty responsive to kind of whatever we want. And even for people whose love language is gift giving, it's not like we suddenly get just a room full of plastic junk,
yeah.
you know, like, so we're pretty spoiled in that way. But, I think it's more setting boundaries for me, it's setting boundaries within myself of not
yeah.
just because I'm the extrovert. I'm like, let's do all the things with all the people at all the times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know?
But recognizing that's actually not even what's best for me. And it's certainly not what's best for my family. Mm-hmm. And so how do we say yes to everything that we can and then say when it's time to go to be done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that you talked about like setting boundaries within yourself first and then communicating those. Cause I think that is step one, even kind of identifying what do I value here at this Christmas season before I then can even expect other people to acknowledge that and to support that. Mm-hmm. And I think, Cole, you had mentioned this to me one time. It's really important to, within family culture, kind of talk about and define what you value before the kids can even realize it. Because, I mean, I know you had said this, Coley, about even bringing Dax to like things like grocery ministry, wanting Dax to see the value in loving and serving the community and loving people outside of our family, even before ourselves sometimes. And even as much as you've done that consistently over the years, you still say like, oh, he still thinks he's the center of the world, right? It is consistent like messaging to your children before they even realize or can verbalize those values of what your family loves and values. So I think trying to communicate those well to family and extended families, yes, I think even among Christians can have different ways in which we show love and show our care for one another. I think my husband and my nuclear families are believers. But even within that, there are some different expectations around the holidays and how we show love and how we focus on the spirit of it all. But trying to navigate kids not feeling like more of the center of attention than they already do feel like.
They always will to some extent.
Quite frankly, there's probably a lot of adults who do the same thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And Cole, you mentioned even time boundaries. I think one thing I'm trying to practice in my own life is leaving some margin. And that, I think that's harder at the holiday time, but things do come up and being able to say yes to the good and meaningful things that come up at the holiday time is going to be important. And modeling that for families is good too.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, I think about, it's, you know, in my family that's very spread out across the country. Like Emily and I, like in my family, I'm the only one who lives in Minnesota now. Mm-hmm. Emily's family is very centralized here in the city. Sans, like one cousin who's up in Duluth, but everybody's here. So for me, and this was part of, you know, navigating the who's at whose holiday, and we don't have kids yet. So that obviously like is a very different dynamic than even having young kids or having multiple, like I know a lot of families here do, is the sort of trade-off.
Oh, yeah.
You know, between like who's getting Christmas, who's getting Thanksgiving, who's getting this, who's getting that. And I think for me, the older that I get and the older that my family becomes, I think the more that they've honestly just kind of embraced the idea that it's like the holidays are going to be kind of hit or miss because everybody's kind of gone their wayward paths just a little bit because we are so spread out. Mm-hmm. So when we can, we will. But I think it's, you know, just something unique in my case where we've kind of accepted that distance is just kind of the way that it is. And we're not going to do this really contrived. Everybody has to be everywhere all at once.
On Christmas Day, on specifically. Christmas.
Yeah. So that's taken the pressure off some. And that's just part of, you know, at an early age, we all had to get used to that distance and, you know, the sort of blended families and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
I know for some people, though, that can be really, really hard when they feel kind of in that tug of war between either in-laws or extended family members who really, really want to have everybody over, but you know that you can't, so.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me that I had forgotten about this, but, you know, growing up, so we were the ones that lived out of town. My parents grew up here in the cities, and we lived in central Minnesota, and so we were also heavily involved in our home church, and so quite regularly, our Christmas Eve, Christmas Day weekend, whatever it was, would look like this. We would spend all day at church on Christmas Eve, and there were probably four services, a children's program, whatever it was. Dad and I were in the choir. You know, we would do all the things.
Yeah.
Half the time, Dad was running the kids program, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then we would jump in the car and eat dinner on the way down. We would have cheese and crackers and Catawba juice in the clear little glasses. And my sister, Kelsey, always liked to put the in one minivan we had because, you know, that's what we always had. There was a cup holder where the where the glass would like reflect light. And so the light through the Catawba juice, which is sparkling, not wine, sparkling cider. But it would light up the room. And so then there would be like sparkles all over the car ceiling. Oh, and
it was your own little Polar Express. It sounded like.
Yeah. So we would have, and we would sing Christmas songs and like, we, you know, do all the things.
Cool.
And we loved it. And my parents were just trying to like keep us all, you know, from having like blood sugar crashes and like just trying to get through it.
That's really cool.
Meat sticks and cheese and crackers. And like, we thought it was so special.
Yeah.
And then we would get to my grandparent, my dad's side of the family. And they would have been together all day.
Mm-hmm.
And so we come in just for like, hey, let's do presents. Bah! You know, and like we'd hang out and have fun with the cousins for a while.
That's
would stay there for the night, or we would then drive across the cities to my other grandparents, my mom's side of the family, because and they usually just had more room for us to sleep. And then in Christmas Day morning, we would spend with my mom's side of the family.
Yeah, totally.
So, I mean, as a kid, it was like, this is the best, you know? And now as a parent, I'm like, my parents are insane. You know? But that's also, that's accurate. You know, like my parents are quick to say yes. And they're like, nope, let's do it. Let's do it. But it became this tradition of like, mom and dad were like, I think, you know, we've got, our church has grown again. Now we have 5 Christmas Eve services or something crazy at one point. And maybe we should just go home and sleep and come down in the morning. And we'd be like, but no, cheese and crackers in the car. Like, seriously, that's what you care about?
Oh, man.
But I think that's a good point, though, because Christmas often like leads us to this point of sentimentalism that can be, for lack of a better term, toxic sometimes, right?
Mm.
And it's good to reassess our traditions. Like, is this tradition actually something that is worth holding on to because it points us to a bigger value or a bigger meaning beyond us? Or is it something we just do because we feel trapped in this tradition?
Totally.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's good to reevaluate your traditions. But at the same time, it was funny for my parents to realize that, like, that's what we thought was special. Because they just thought it was like an easy way to feed us in the car, you know, until we were like, no, this is like really precious to us. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it doesn't have to be grandiose to be meaningful and memorable either. Mm-hmm. You know? So one of the things my parents did is like, you know, we to kind of that redeem the culture idea is there's this awesome book called Santa, Are You For Real? And it was out of print for a while, but I think it's been reprinted with new pictures that, you know, don't have the same memories for me. But but the whole thing was that it took the story of St. Nicholas and introduced it to the idea. And like, and that's kind of how we ended up with Santa. So like the answer ultimately was like, is Santa real? Well, no, but yeah. And it was this guy who loved Jesus, you know, so we get back to the heart of the matter. And so we knew, we didn't ever grow up believing in Santa, but it was like, oh, well, who's Santa? Oh, he's that guy based on St. Nicholas, like from the beginning.
Yeah, there was context.
There was context. And so it was like, sure, you can talk about Santa, whatever. Like, it wasn't a big deal. Well, what are some other things that you guys have done in the past to kind of navigate the holiday season and all of its craziness or to remember the reasons for why we celebrate this season of Advent?
I think, and this is one that I've definitely learned more in the last several years, as one of those ways to embody a third way, which is to say that, because we talked about boundaries and the necessity to understand like your own before communicating them. But I think Cole, you had said like, don't put boundaries around your boundaries. And so having said that, I think one of the things that's actually really beautiful is volunteering during the holiday season.
Yeah.
And also keeping your living room, your dining room open to either single friends or people who don't have a place to go for the holidays, because I think that communicates something way, 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 way bigger about even just the Christmas story itself, because, you know, Mary and Joseph were, for all intents and purposes, refugees in the middle of infanticide and, you know, Herodian, you know, oppression. And again, there was that 400 years of silence. So not only were they Jews who were waiting for that prophetic word, but they were also literally in the middle of, you know, governmental and societal oppression. And they were, you know, looking for a sense of hospitality. And so how much more then is that than, you know, something that we can and should, I think, find ways and conduits in which to give that.
Yeah, one thing it reminds me of is that we need to ask, our community group has a number of people that aren't from here originally.
Yeah.
And it occurs to me, like, we should ask them, like, what are your plans for Christmas Eve or Christmas Day? Mm-hmm. Because my grandparents were always great at that. They would always, there'd be somebody random from the church or from the neighborhood or whatever that was also at the table. And half the time, grandma would have also found a little gift for them to open or something, because that's just how she is. And it's awesome. It's an incredible example. It just makes me think we should ask our community groups and people within Antioch to make sure that nobody is, at least nobody's alone who doesn't want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Joel and I, our families both live out of town, and there have been, when we first moved up here, there were some friends of ours that we knew that would invite us over for things like Easter and Christmas Eve and stuff, because they knew we didn't have family around. It was kind of like, they invite lots of people like that. And it was kind of like this gathering of like family-less people. But we kind of, it was a cool community. And so over the past couple of years, since Joel and I have been blessed to be able to buy a home, that's been something that we've strived to do as well. And it's been really cool to see, like, yeah, it's just kind of what the body of Christ does, right? We take care of one another. And if that's offering a place of peace and comfort and reflection for people at the holiday times, let's mm-hmm. do it.
Yeah.
That should be a part of our culture.
Mm-hmm. Which totally. I think actually, again, it's sort of, I think in a really potent way, it is the sort of anti-venom for, you know, consumerism and the materialism, because it actively puts us in a posture to have to think about the other. Mm-hmm. And to give up of our resources and our time and our effort, instead of sort of hoarding it and thinking, like, you know, what's the better deal that I could get? Because it kind of defies all those physics.
Yeah. And then you can invite people into a home where Christ is at the center, mm-hmm. whether you have a Christmas tree and presents and, you know, Christmas gnomes or whatever. you know, we love all that stuff in our house, and not everybody does. And that's okay. But but I think to let people see that, like, we celebrate Christmas, but we actually started this thing, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we're the ones who own it, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that's a question then too. You had mentioned, like, sometimes we do things a little bit differently in our homes. Do either of you have traditions of things like Advent calendars or nativity sets, or ways in which you have allowed maybe what you believe to be visualized a little bit more in your home?
That's a great segue into point three. Coley, I think you have probably a little bit more with your family being like all believers that maybe like you can speak to first. So
sure. Well, and what's funny is, you know, my dad has even spoken on similar topics before, maybe not related to Christmas, but one of the things he always says is like, hey, we never grew up, like, we didn't raise our kids with family devotions.
Yeah.
And he'll kind of cringe, like, please don't hate me, you know, because it's kind of like the, like, what? You have to do family devotions. Yeah. But what we did see is we were talking about the Bible all the time, or about spiritual matters, or about a spiritual perspective on worldly matters. And I saw my dad reading his Bible all the time.
Yeah.
So when it comes to Christmas, it would be things like, my mom did collect those houses. I forget what the Department 56.
Yeah.
Those little scenes. We have like a ton of them. I think she's given away or sold a bunch of them, but we still have a bunch, and it, you know, makes just like a warm space. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people have those. But we also, I think my youngest sister, especially, they would collect nativity sets. Mm. And when she was really little, like really little, she would call them, she just called them Away in a Mangers. And so we had all these different versions of Away in a Manger. It's like all over the house. Some were, you know, super fragile and antique, and some were just made of wood, and some were, you know, a tad avant-garde.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
But you could talk about what they were and who all the people were, and then sometimes we'd have like the wise men way far away from the main nativity set.
I didn't ever think to do something like that.
And then over time they'd travel.
That's really good. Forward. So in my house, we were a little bit more nominally Christian. So there wasn't ever all these, you know, different overtures to Christmas as a deeply, you know, religious experience. But we did have a nativity set from like not the like the early 80s.
Yes.
That we put out every single year. It was legitimately made out of like moss. Like it was rather interactive and pretty awesome. And so I remember that would always be set up on the mantle. We had like one of those gigantic armoires with walnut and all that stuff. So we'd hang up the garland and then we'd put that kind of right in the center. So there was always, I guess, how can I say it? There was always kind of an eclipse of deeper Christian meaning around the holiday. But in totality, it never really, you know, went beyond that. But one of our traditions that we did do was every single year we would do the Christmas Carol at the Guthrie Theater. I think I had talked about this last year when I had preached. And then we would do Midnight Mass afterwards.
Okay.
So there was a very, you know, traditional liturgical sort of essence to the way that we celebrated because, you know, there's a really, you know, old timey Baroque sort of, you know, feeling that the Christmas Carol invoked. And then obviously doing Midnight Mass in a massive cathedral, candlelit set a certain vibe and it associated a kind of feeling or an atmosphere around Christmas, which has definitely kept with me.
Yeah.
My dad also was really big into, he had a record player. So when we went over to his apartment to decorate, there was basically a vinyl record of the Westminster Chorale singing all these really old hymns. And it just sounded like butter. Oh, it was great. So
got you in the Christmas mood. And I'm trying to think. My family growing up, I think like yours, yeah, we had like a nativity set. It wasn't made out of moss, though. That's super cool.
Yeah, it was really awesome.
One of the things that, like, I don't think I acknowledged how cool it was until I got older is the church I grew up in, we had this tradition of every Advent season, families in our church would gather together and we would like take like the church bus or church vans and we would to like assisted living homes.
Oh, cool.
And would sing like families would like sing Christmas carols at the doors of the people in like the nursing homes or the assisted living homes.
That's so nice.
And I think as a young kid, you're like, where am I? Why does it smell funny in here? But now that I'm older, I'm like, oh, wow, that was actually pretty cool that families could gather around like singing Christmas carols to people who maybe didn't have family that could come see them at Christmas time or might have actually missed the ability to be able to go worship at a church service or things like that. So I look back on that tradition and think, wow, that was pretty cool. And I'm glad my parents let me do that.
Yeah.
And then something that we are actually trying to start this year with my family is having an Advent calendar that every day focuses on a different name of Christ.
Oh, cool.
So that's something we hope to start doing. And I know my husband has brought this into our marriage since we've been married is they did on Christmas morning every year having a birthday cake for Jesus. Like literally singing happy birthday to Jesus.
Yeah.
And it, I'm sure to an outsider has looked really funny the past couple of years when two grown adults are just singing happy birthday on Christmas morning. But it's something we hope to continue with our kids too.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about Christmas carols.
Yeah.
A second ago. And that reminds me, again, probably on those Christmas Eve drives, we would, you know, you just find yourselves talking. We didn't have smartphones yet. We didn't have iPads. So, right. Like, you're actually interacting as a family in the car, and we were probably listening to Christmas music. And I remember one time we asked Dad, hey, what, or both of our parents, we're like, what does that mean? Because I think it was, deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la. And he's like, okay. Well, deck the halls means like decorate the halls. Boughs of holly, it's, I think at the time he said like twigs and branches or berries and branches or something.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're like, well, why don't they just say that? And he's like, because decorate the stairway. Oh, yeah, because it was decorate the stairs because the hall like with the railings kind of.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was like, decorate the stairs with beads and branches. Fa la la la. It's like, okay. Well, so then it became this thing where we would retooling
of Christmas
songs. Yeah, so we would retool Christmas songs. So I remember like the first Noel. The first Noel the angels did say was to certain poor shepherds in fields as they lay. So there's weird words and there's weird like grammar.
Yeah.
And so it became the first Christmas time the angels said to the shepherds who laid out in a field in the dark, or something like that.
It's almost like, have you like done like the like reverse Google Translate where you put things in Google Translate, and it's totally like that. To English? Yeah.
So it's kind of, that's the one where it's like, Christmas time, Christmas time, Christmas time, Christmas time. And the song just sounds kind of less sacred than in the French.
It's kind of funny because like growing up as the youngest male, of course, retooling Christmas songs meant something way different.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Jingle Bells, Batman Smells was the mantra of every like middle school or elementary boy
you know,
in the 90s.
Or like, you know, set the Christmas tree on fire, fa la 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 la.
Oh, I don't think I heard that one.
Was that just me?
A Bryce original.
I must have really been in a metal at an early age or something like that. So.
Yeah, but I think those traditions that are good and meaningful that we can look back on and that point us to Christ, that's a beautiful way because we do inevitably have more people in our homes in the holiday time for Christmas parties and things like that. Mm-hmm. And some are believers, some are not, but what a great way to, not that we're putting idols up in our home, but things that can tangibly point to the bigger meaning behind what we believe and why we do what we do at Christmas.
Exactly.
So with those kind of traditions being in mind, are there other ways in which we can slow down and incorporate things like spiritual disciplines into the Advent season? Because I know at the beginning you had mentioned that the whole, one of the big points of Advent is to have these receptive hearts as we anticipate the joy of the season. So what would you say as far as using spiritual disciplines for that purpose?
Yeah, this is probably where a little bit more of my traditional and liturgical background comes to the forefront, because in my Episcopalian church, this is part of where the Book of Common Prayer actually came in during the Advent season. So there were specific parts of that book that we read together as a congregation that were, you know, a very devotional type of analog. There was also, I don't know if either you or Coley ever did these, because did you both grow up like Covenant or EFCA at all?
I grew up Baptist. Okay. Yeah,
so
but
not did you ever do like the Advent candles, like the three pink ones and the one purple one?
I never did. I think sometimes in things like Baptist churches or evangelical churches, sometimes I think there was a swing sometime that people were like, we don't want to get into these like traditions because that could draw from the purpose. But I think we swung too far. So no, I did not, but I have been in churches where that has been.
Because that was, so there were all those like small, like the collection of physical representations and reminders that were devotional in and of themselves. Yeah. So like, for example, when we would start Advent, we'd have literally, it was a set of candles. So three pink ones and then one purple one. Mm-hmm. And there was a song that we sung. We'd light the first one on the first week. And then would put it out at the end of service. And then we would light the two of them second week and then third week and then all of them on Christmas Eve. Mm. And then it would be like brought down the center between both pews. And then like Silent Night was done. So there was like a lot of those kinds of things with the structure and high tradition that stuff sort of built in.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this doesn't mean everybody has to start doing that in the middle of their hallways or staircases. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I think there are ways in which, like, if you wanted to do those, you know, those candles as something on your dining room table, or kind of leading with good Advent devotionals. I know there's, I can't remember the name of it from John Piper. I think it was the Dawn of Indestructible Joy.
Hmm.
Which sounds kind of metal in and of itself.
So, a little bit. Sounds like a band.
A little bit. But I know that's a really good one. There's one that I'm going to be like kind of putting out there and recommending during Advent in December. And it's a collection of Advent devotionals that were written by like Richard Foster, T.F. Torrance, and these really amazing theologians over the course of a couple hundred years. So integrating those either into your own personal devotional time. I know, Coley, you had said that, like, oh my gosh, we never did family devotion. So if that's your rhythm and it feels maybe a little bit easier to integrate, that's totally awesome. If it's not something that you do, then maybe that's something you consider for the Advent season as a way to sort of pause and meditate on those things when it seems like it can get swallowed up in the middle of schedules and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I think we did do though, is like we would change up the books that were on the coffee table or in the kids' bookshelf.
Totally.
Like we would have those Christmas books, Jan Brett books that we loved.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Santa, Are You For Real? And different things like that. That, so you would engage with it differently. Mm-hmm. Even if it wasn't like, everyone sit down now so we can talk about God. You know?
Like, who is that an impression of?
I don't know. It's the one my dad does all the time. Probably some old revival preacher.
Shout out to Herb Bloomquist in the other room.
Yeah, watching the kids now.
Yeah.
The one thing that I think is just important, that like the Christmas season comes with a lot. It's just a lot. And it's a lot because of a lot of reasons, you know, that we've already talked about. Culture is crazy and yada yada. But even like as a Christian, like God coming to the earth incarnate is a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot to process. It's a lot to celebrate. But ultimately, I think if we can get through this season, I don't mean get through it like just grit and bear it, but like if at the end of this season we can say that we reflected on Christ's coming, and especially on the hope that that brings, I think that sets us up really well for 2023.
Yeah.
Or for the coming year, especially because right after the Christmas season, January and February are often the darkest months. Mm-hmm. They're the longest months. They are the hard crash after holidays.
Yep.
Like December might get cold, but it's cheery, and you know, you don't have carolers coming around on January 14th, you know, like, to kind of warm it up.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but that means that the thrill of hope that we get in December is what can carry us through January, February, March, when it snows in April again. You know, and we're still not to Easter.
And I mean, that brings up a point of, you know, things like seasonal depression are real. And a lot of people experience that in Minnesota. And it always, every year, it surprises me, but it shouldn't. The amount of things that just seem so dark and heavy around the holiday times. You know, we see things historically like more suicides happening in the winter months. People that we know and love that are battling depression, people that we know that have lost loved ones, sometimes at the holiday time, that hits the hardest.
For sure.
Yes.
And so that's why the hope that we have in Christ and in the incarnation is so important to just proclaim so loudly this time of year.
Yeah, it really does speak to, you know, I think about the way in which there's a particular loneliness that I think people tend to associate with those longer months. Like you're shut in, you feel like a cave troll, the days are really short, and there isn't that, it's not enveloped by any kind of like particular celebration. And so I think that is part of where community is really important, is to sort of, I think in Galatians 6, when Paul says to carry one another's burdens, and in this way you fulfill the law of Christ. So I think that's, you know, where honesty in some of those things, I know in our community groups and DNA groups, to just say like, the holidays are actually kind of tough for me. And then knowing to like kind of keep tabs on those people, to pray for them regularly with the more fervence, and to just kind of check in on them, like, hey, how is all that stuff going? Because I remember being in my last program, I originally was doing marriage and family therapy, and there was this kind of twisted joke that it's like business booms after the holidays. Because there's so many people who go and see counseling because it's, you know, oh my goodness, family was so awful this year, or it was another year that I was lonely, or another year that I think about where I lost my parents, or something like that. So I think that being like us being the church, the hands and feet of Jesus, is to, you know, be compassionate, intentional people with some of our closest, you know, of kin, like in our community groups and in this place, to help, you know, cross the sticks of January, February in particular, when all this is over. So
for sure. Yeah. And we have the benefit of celebrating Advent on the other side of Easter. You know, I think of, you know, how Mary and Joseph and the rest felt. Like the only person who seemed truly excited about that whole week was the prophet who had been waiting for Christ to come. John the Baptist's dad?
Simeon?
Zechariah.
Zechariah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Zechariah and Elizabeth.
So I think of all the people that were involved in Christ's incarnation in the moment, and, you know, so much heaviness with, you know, unmarried pregnancy and refugees and having to travel to Bethlehem and all the things. Yep. But then here's Zechariah with this like huge song of celebration. And he's like, yes, this is it. This is what we've been waiting for. And I think that, I think we can be that to culture in this season where it's like, no, 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 this is what we want. Well, this is what you need.
Yeah.
This is who you've been looking for. And yeah, that we can live in that hope. Well, thanks for coming out again.
Yeah, I hopefully will not have another accident.
Yeah, we're recording this on a very snowy day.
And, which is like deeply ironic.
It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. Yeah,
starts the conversation.
Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Having grace for others on the roads.
Yes, exactly.
All the things. Sweet. Well, we hope that all of you have a fantastic Advent season here. And hope you can join us on Sunday mornings to celebrate it together in person through song and looking at the Word. But until our next podcast, have a good one.
See you later, Antioch.
Special thanks to Spotify artist Zakar, aka Ryan Maurer, our worship leader, for allowing us to use his music on this podcast. Thanks to Bryce Langley for joining us for this conversation, and for my parents for becoming de facto babysitters while we were able to record. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
As the last surviving member of this podcast, I would like to take a moment and say that Coley and Rachel are absolute saints.